Expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarland, host of The Conversation with Al McFarland. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm glad to be here. Glad to have you along as well. Kudos, as always, to the team, the staff, and volunteers at KFAI. What a wonderful organization. What a wonderful opportunity. What a great platform connecting us to each other locally in our neighborhoods, in our homes, and around the world online at kfai.org. Well, you know, we are streaming this program on a variety of social media as well. We stream it to YouTube through the Insight News MN YouTube channel. Join us there if you are using that platform. We're also streaming on Black Press USA, both YouTube and Facebook. And we're streaming live to LinkedIn and other platforms as well. So we're happy to have this technology to connect and to be a part of a conversation. Conversation is critical right now. Time is critical. We're monitoring, for example, there's supposed to be maybe a press conference, a press statement by the president at this hour. And so if that comes on and it's of interest to us, we're going to break in and check out what he's doing. The reason I'm monitoring it is because I was listening to social media last night, early this morning, and they're a buzz about, what's going on at the White House. There were images of people dumping bags out of the upstairs window at the White House. I don't know if it was AI or if it was something real, but they're raising the question. And then they were saying that the White House made a bizarre post last night at 2 a.m. The post was Donald Trump writing about the 11 greatest things he knew about how to whatever he does. So it just seemed curious. People wondering if he's in health, that the post was almost an obituary type post. So we will see. Well, listen, today I have the fortune and the pleasure of connecting with one of my best friends, my dear friends, and one of your best friends and dear friends, who is the host of Saturday Morning here at KFAI, Grand Diva D. Henry Williams. Grand Diva, good afternoon, and welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. How you doing?
I am doing well. It is totally my pleasure, and I am I'm excited. Thank you very much for the invitation. And let me just say one last thing. I'm honored.
Well, I'm honored to be with you. You know, you and I go back a long, long way. I thought it would be cool just to sort of walk down memory lane a little bit. Cool. Talk about your experiences and mine here on KFAI, but use that as a launch pad to talk about what we know about community and use that as a launch pad to talk about the music we love. The blues, right. Other things.
Among other things, absolutely.
I call myself a connoisseur of a...
Breaking up a little
Let's
bit.
Say one thing, too. Sometimes my internet is unstable, and so for some reason I freeze up on you. Just keep talking. You know how to do this, Grand Diva.
Absolutely.
So we'll keep it rolling. Yeah. So let's start off by talking about how long you and I met. How do we meet? That's number one. You remember?
Well, I don't remember how we met, but I remember Sandra Gillard, and I know that, and that's part of my, that's where I'm going to enter. Mm-hmm. You had indicated that, seemed like I remember we talking about radio or communications, definitely Insight News for sure. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned that Sandra Gillard was leaving KFEI, going to wherever, and that her slot, her radio slot hour, would be available. And I think we both agreed that you were the one. And then, of course, KFEI obviously said, yep, Al McFarland is the one. And Sandra, you asked me a question, which you didn't have to, is I want to change the name. I said, well, of course. And of course, it became what it is right now, Conversations. Well, this is The Conversation with Al McFarland, but I remember Conversations with Al McFarland. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's my beginning. Yeah.
Well, that's how we got going. And that was really it, you know, so it was a good thing. But you were already at that point in time an established OG, one of the, sort of.
Well, not at the time. I was an OG at the time. I am okay. Now.
Okay, so you're on the path. You're on the path.
Anyway.
How did you come to KFAI? How did you get started in radio?
Well, you know, Lynn. I'll remember Lynn anyway. And my deceased husband. No. Anyway, Lynn was listening to KFEI, and I got home or something or other, and he says KFEI is looking for volunteers, and I said, oh, okay, great, because I don't know what he's talking about. I'm just getting in, and he says, well, you've always wanted to be on radio, mm-hmm. And I said, really? When did that revelation come to you? I don't remember having that conversation. And anyway, it goes on and on and on around that circle, because I believe in going in circles, because I need to understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And we eventually got to KFEI and or volunteer orientation. And that was my introduction, was Lynn saying, you know, you've always wanted to be on radio. And it's like, let me think about that a moment. And so here I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Orientation. Who was it? Steve LeBeau and LeBeau, Bull Mac. I don't know. He had a Mac name too, but they were the coordinators of bringing folks in, and didn't know anything about radio, and was down in that basement at the church, and.
Walker Church, right? 31st, I think, and
yep. Mm-hmm. And Walker Church, and it was like, wow. But I didn't start there. I started at the drugstore on Lake in, is it Lake in Bloomington? Yeah, Butler Drug is what it was called. Yeah, okay. That's where I started, and I moved with KFEI to where we are currently on the West Bank.
Okay.
So that's the travel part.
and you have a partner when you started, right? Who's your partner when you started?
Yes. My co-host was Yvonne Vernon. Bonnie V was her radio name, and we co-hosted for 2 years, 2.5, no more than 3. Mm-hmm. She had to leave, and won't go through all that, but. It was like, okay, then I stepped in and decided that I needed to comfort, because our listeners loved us both. Mm-hmm. And so I had to some kind of way feel like I had to comfort the listeners, because that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. It was very, very important to me to do that, because I like to think that I've got somewhat of a kind spirit. It's not always shows. So that was it. The third year. So I am this week Saturday, September 6th, just to put a tail on it. I'll be celebrating 37.
Wow.
There it is.
37 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is yours the longest running program on KFAI?
Oh, no. There are a handful more, one on mm-hmm. Sunday morning. There's a few of them that are Pete Lee, of course, you know, mm-hmm. Pete Lee. Yeah. and Daniel, then Ryan, anyway, there's a couple of them, there's several of them. Not many, but there's a few of us.
Yeah, 37 years is a long, long time. So when you came into it, what was the original concept when you and your colleague launched the what was the original name and the original concept?
Well, you know, we've been working on that. We were just like so excited because mm-hmm. when I said, "Hey, Bonnie, we got somebody." Well, anyway, there's a spot open on Saturday mornings from 6 to 9, and I think we should take it and do this thing together. And she said, "Saturday mornings, we won't be able to go out on Fridays." I said, "Well, you know." That's not our conversation, darling. but Bonnie V particularly liked Stevie Wonder type music, but in particular the artist Stevie Wonder, and leaned towards jazz and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. What I particularly leaned toward is what you had just opened with blues is where I come from. My mother and her sister, my aunt, as they say, raise me on the blues. And blues, rhythm and blues, R&B, soul, and Southern soul, all the types of soul. And so we didn't necessarily have a theme or an intention that grew as from my remembrance anyway. Mm-hmm. After that point, because I thought I needed to have an intention, seeing as I was going to be a solo host. Mm-hmm. And of course, the intention is healing and celebration, and that is why I have that is why the program, the Saturday morning program from 6 to 9 a.m., is I've named it R&B for healing and celebration. And emphasis is on both, because we want to celebrate our healing, and then we want to heal as we celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's fascinating. If I remember, the original name was a blended.
No, that came second. That was after Bonnie B. First, the original name was Watercolors. That was what Bonnie wanted. Bonnie wanted to name it Watercolors, mm-hmm. and I was like. Oh, all right. So I'm not one to, I will haggle. So I decided not to haggle on that one because it just wasn't, what was the point? And I said, okay, if we were going to do this together and we were early in our relationship as co-hosts, it was like, let's come on now, girl, you can do this. Mm-hmm. And so it was originally Watercolors. As I was saying, I needed to and felt very strongly needed to comfort my listening audience and not abruptly change the name, because I did not want to keep that name. So I decided to do a great blend of watercolors, mm-hmm. which you just mentioned.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how that came about.
Okay. And so what's the theme? Watercolors. What was the visual that reflected, that choice of words by Bonnie and by you?
Well, for me, I can't speak for Bonnie, but for me, it was what I'm doing now. It was a blend. And I told her, I said, we're going to play the blues. Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to do R&B, even though the Motown sound is, they claim they were R&B, and I'm sure they are. but to me, watercolors meant a blend of, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's, because I'm an artist, I'm a visual artist, and I have dabbled in watercolors, so the art itself, and I know what that is, and I know what that meant to me. So I said, okay, watercolors. Okay, so it's purple, it's blue, sometimes it's red, and most definitely it's got to be black. So that was where I was coming from, the genres, the different types of genres. That was my watercolors. That was my definition of it.
Okay, all right. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. My guest is my friend and my partner here at KFAI, the Grand Diva, D. Henry Williams. You listen to her every Saturday morning from 6 to 9, right here on KFAI and worldwide at KFAI.org. Healing and celebration. Let's focus on the current mission then. And
okay.
How has that evolved? When did you sort of shift the brand and why?
I shifted the brand because I had to think of settling my own spirit. Because one always has to start from within. You can't just push things out to people and say, you need to and you should, and that kind of thing. So I said to me, I need to. Mm-hmm. And I must. And so what I was doing, definitely at least once or twice a week doing exercise of some sort, and doing acupuncture and yoga, and doing in therapy, because I think it's important. I highly recommend it to all of my family because because it's my family and they're part of me. You need to be in therapy every other week, if not once a month, and some of us every week. So that's part of it. It is therapy and all of the activities to keep that mind, body, and spirit balanced as best we can. It's not all the time it is, but that's why we do it, so that we can achieve part of that balance.
Okay. All right. I'm going to come back and talk to you more about spirit and things of the spirit. But I'd love to sort of have you walk us through the range of musics that you love. And start with the blues. What does the blues mean to you? What do you love the most about the blues? What kinds of songs or artists strike your chords for saying, oh, this is real? I mean, one of the things that everybody looks forward to on Saturday, play Happy Birthday.
Yes, the Happy Dog Day song. Yes. That is, I'm not sure what that genre is, but I think it's Swamp Dog is his name. It's the artist, and he considers himself a blues artist. So I'm going to go with that flow. But I was introduced to the blues, as I said earlier, by my mother and grandmother. Not my grandmother at all, but my mother and her sister, Helen, my aunt.
Where'd you grow up?
Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
Yeah. And our roots are Oklahoma, what they call Indian Territory.
Okay.
And so on a weekly basis, my mother and her sister, Helen, Aunt Helen, got together on our front porch, my mother, where we lived, and played on a record player with that little arm on it, the blues. And specifically, I can remember, because I was a DJ, and I didn't know I was, but I was the one that was playing the music, put the records on and cue it and keep it going. And I kept Bobby Blue Bland going, B.B. King, Lord have mercy. That was my very, very first artist I remember, B.B. King. They played some of those songs, the same song, over and over and over. Lift That Arm Off and Let It Go. I said, okay.
I'm back, I think. So, I have an unstable internet connection here, so we lost you, Kandi, but go ahead.
Well, okay. I was just saying that
you're the player on the front porch and you're the DJ.
I'm the DJ and not knowing what that was, I was just a person that regulated all the songs and always bought in, and the bartender. So I was at just go to the kitchen and get two cans of beer. that's his life. Bobby Blue Bland was one of their favorites, but B.B. King was the favorite. And those are the two that I can remember right off. All black males. Yeah. If they sing in the blues, they had to be black men. And so that's where I was. And they whispered. And they whispered around me.
how old were you then?
11.
11. Yeah, they whispering over your head. Make sure you
weren't
listening too close. Right.
But I wasn't that child. I was precocious. I was there listening intently and getting closer and making sure that the beer was right.
Sip it. Take a sip.
There you go. Yeah. On that second or third round, they would tell me not to open it, just bring it close, just bring it, and they would do it. I got an attitude, Al.
I'm Al McFarland. This is the conversation with Al McFarland, talking with my friend and colleague, the Grand Diva, D. Henry Williams. She's on every Saturday from 6 to 9 a.m. right here on KFAI. And so talk more about the blues, B.B. King, Bobby Bland. What are the other, you know, musics or musicians that really strike your sensibility of
Thank you. Denise LaSalle, Etta James. I'm talking about those are come and gone, and of course Millie Jackson is still here. I'm happy to say, and she's got new something out. But anyway, Johnny Taylor. Lattimore, those folks in that genre. That's some people call that soul, but it crosses back and forth as far as I'm concerned. And let me see, who is that in Chicago? Buddy Guy, love Buddy Guy's music. Yeah, when he plays by himself and with himself, So those are just some of the artists, and of course some of our local artists here, they're not necessarily blues, but I'm trying to think now. All of a sudden, local artists, and now I'm supposed to bring up a name. So let me come back to that. Kendra Glenn, who studied under Barbara LeSure. I don't know if you remember Barbara LeSure.
Sure. Of course.
The late, great Barbara LeSure. I mean, my God, a powerful, powerful blues artist from Chicago, from Kingston Mine in Chicago on the north side. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I lived there, and Lynn and I lived there many, many, many decades. Mm-hmm. And it was just a wonderful, anyway, I love it. I love it. Yeah. So those are some of the blues. I mean, and there's also the Southern soul genre, which to me is the blues. But you know, like, respectfully, it is Southern soul, I like to put my boots on, you know, every once in a while. Boots on the ground and raise my red cup. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
so it's all good as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, we call the blues by many different names, but we never call it jazz. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Yeah, we never call it jazz. Sometimes, you know, they say jazz blues. It's like, really? But you know, I have to go with what I know, and I do know the genre very well.
Okay. Have you had a chance to interact with any of those artists that you named as a DJ host or as part of your job as a, you know, promoting?
Definitely Barbara LeSure, because she was a very dear, dear friend of mine. Had the opportunity to meet Buddy Guy when he was here several years back here at the State Fair, by way of a Barbara LeSure, because she knew, of course, you know, as good as she was, she knew Buddy. And then it might have been the blues lady too. I don't want to diss that part. And let me see, who else blues? Oh, I had a long interview with B.B. King after one of his shows many, many, many decades ago, and had an opportunity to get in touch with him and for an interview. So that was a really, really wonderful, wonderful experience.
How did you come across? I remember, I think either I interviewed him or I listened to interviews, maybe it's listened to interviews where he always kind of lamented that it seemed to him Black people were abandoning the blues. His audience shifted from the Chipmunk circuit back in the day, right, big concert halls and then, you know, stadium type events. And those audiences were primarily young white people. And so he talks about that the way I heard it and felt it.
No, was, you're right.
Was being a little bit rejected, you know, feeling rejected by his own people, us. What do you think? Have you heard that?
Yes, I heard him say that a couple of times and more than a couple of times. And, you know, I don't know what that sentiment was, but I have never felt that personally. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure where he was coming from. I do remember B.B. King saying that he had went to Africa because they was talking about the roots, the blues roots, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And he had come back and basically said, no, this is Black, he didn't use the word Black American, a phrase, but he said, no, this is Black folks music. We created this out of that enslavement period time. And he says, and that indeed is where gospel also came from, the blues. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, at the time I wasn't into all the history of it all, but when he started talking about, you know, like you were just saying, oh, Black folks, we're not doing the blues. Well, I think what it was is when the Rolling Stones, the Beatles back in that era, when they first jumped on the stage, so to speak, and into a studio, that was the music that they gravitated to. And so he wasn't really, from my perspective, and I might be wrong, but I know I'm not. but he might have been talking about white people, you know what I'm saying? Because then they said, and then the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger said something about, why are you listening to me when you should be listening to the original, blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, shut up, you know. But so I don't know, maybe that during that time, you know, I don't think we had, we just listened to the blues. We didn't have opinions about it because it was the music that we loved. Other than that yeah. opinion, you know, we weren't verbal about, oh no, we don't like the blues anymore. I think he was lamenting about that takeover, or not even takeover, because I don't believe in that. I misspoke. That co-opting. Mm-hmm. That's what I think he was lamenting about, and he wanted to, I guess, to put the blame on me. It was like, no, bro.
It wasn't me.
And then nobody.
I still like the music. I'm still listening. Right.
Exactly, and I don't know nobody else who you're talking about. And that was, of course, when I was in Chicago at the time, and I was there a long time. And the folks in Chicago, we love blues. We love dub blues. Not the blues, dub blues.
was Coco Taylor in Chicago?
Absolutely. I remember, you know, Coco Taylor lived on 54th and Calumet, 54th and Calumet, and we knew each other. Not well. I didn't know, but I know that we knew each other. Knew each other in the sense we knew each other as when we see each other, that kind of a thing. We didn't, we never made any exchanges or interchanges or talked or anything like that, except, hey, how you doing? That kind of a thing. But Coco, the late great Coco Taylor, I'm sorry. My bad, Coco, my bad. Forgive me. Yeah, she is also the greatest as far as I'm concerned.
Some event, maybe a downtown festival in St. Paul some years ago, but she was absolutely electric and amazing.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable.
And wild and crazy.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. She is very, very, she's top as far as I'm concerned. When I mentioned Eddie James and whoever else I mentioned, I should have said Coco Taylor and then named those people underneath her, aside from her. So no, Coco Taylor is number one as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, you know, and Etta James is
she bad main, too.
Yeah. And you mentioned Millie is rough.
Millie Jackson. Etta James is one of her tracks. The blues is my business, and business is good. And that's the way I feel about every Saturday morning. That the blues is my business, and business is good. Along with the other genres of from the Black diaspora. Because that's the music that I play, music from the Black diaspora. Some people say African-American, I say Black diaspora.
So, you know, when you mentioned B.B. King saying he went to Africa and came home with a clear picture of the origin story of what he believed was the blues. So I listened to that, but I also then think about cats like Taj Mahal.
Oh, my God.
Taj Mahal and cats like, but Taj Mahal for sure, because he would have a different take, I think, on connecting African-American and African music. That's what I think. I could be wrong. But it seems to me that he was like, with his guitar playing in particular, summoning the Senegalese and the West African melodic approach to music. It's like this guy named, I used to play on my show, Dunia was the name of the song. And the artist was from Mali, I believe. I can't think of the name right now. It's been a minute since I've been
here. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, but you know, I love the connection of seeing the bridge, you know, but different people see things differently.
Well, that is true. And, you know, I have, quite frankly, never seen the connection between Black music and African. I just have not. I can't even get to, even the drums, I can't even get to that. I think that they're too distinct for me now, in my spirit, in my soul, and in my hearing. They're two distinct sounds and two distinct rhythms. Maybe one could see the similarities, but I'm not sure myself.
Okay. Did you see the movie Sinners? Did you watch that?
Twice.
So that brings us to the same conversation. The powerful, among the many powerful scenes, one where they
the evolution.
Yeah, but then they go into, you know, time travel. Way back and way forward. And that's another argument about the connection.
Absolutely. You know, I can roll with that. And I enjoyed the scene. I understood it even better when I saw it the second time. But one could not necessarily, if you're just new on the scene, so to speak, one could not necessarily connect hip hop to R&B to blues and then go to Africa too. You know what I'm saying? Maybe not. I don't know. But I think that hip hop, I'm not trying to change to, but anyway, hip hop has borrowed a lot of music, and specifically James Brown. He is the most sampled artist in history as it relates to, I'm just something I've read and I believe, that relates to who is part of that evolution. So when you can say from that perspective, yes, and maybe it does go back that far to the continent, but I'm not sure. I think Black blues music, I'm going to interrupt, I believe blues music is original, and it may have its roots from our ancestors. So if it does, oh, amen.
Think about Robert Johnson. What do you know about him? When you're having this conversation, how would you look at the emergence of Robert Johnson as an icon of the blues genre? What I had read, for example, was that Robert Johnson's Crossroads story is like a famous story about discovering mastery and trading the soul for the gift, right? At the same time, I guess he only did 20 or 25 songs.
Yes.
But I understood those songs became the basis for the entire blues catalog.
Exactly.
Does that make sense? That's how to talk about Robert Johnson.
Well, I can't talk about him a lot, but I can, I'm, I, as I must, let me put it this way. I have this dear friend who you know, DJ Hooker, who hosts on Wednesdays from 7 to 8, Views from the Ground. But anyway, evening. And we were talking about Robert Johnson because he's a big time blues artist to be in his early 30s. Mm. And you should talk to him. Robert Johnson, well, it's something about the story that has always seemed very kind of distorted and slanted, that you have to have some kind of, as Deidre says, why do you have to have something, white folks have to invent evilness to make you great? It's like, well, you know, let's just go with the story, honey. Let's not go get, just don't get pissed off, or excuse me, let's don't get mad. and he was outraged. But Robert Johnson was a genius, mm-hmm. because of where we are right now today and all these other artists who have leaned on his style in one way or the other, and not just the blues, mm-hmm. because you can hear, when you listen to Quincy Jones, you know what I'm saying? That's all I'm gonna say. When you listen to Quincy and Jack McDuff, the late great Jack McDuff, as Jack would always say, people try to put him in that jazz category. And he said, I love jazz, but they try to put him into the, he always said, I don't play jazz. He told me that personally. I knew Jack very, very well. Mm. He said, I don't play jazz. I don't even know why they say that. I play the blues. I said, okay, Jack. And you know, I said, okay, Jack, okay, fine. Don't get mad at me. We're just talking. Yeah. So I look at it from that perspective also. It's like Jack McDuff plays the blues. Mm-hmm. When I first met him and first heard his music in Chicago, I met him here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. But when I first heard his music, I thought, well, it kind of sounds like a little bit of a jazz artist, but not jazz like quote unquote jazz. Mm-hmm. But then when he's told me personally that this is what he played, that he played the blues, yeah. I have to go with that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, fine. Then that's what you do. And I agree with you. So Robert Johnson's, all I'm saying is to say that, because I know about Robert Johnson. What I do know is that many of, if not all of these decades and centuries and whatever millenniums has gone by, that is where Robert Johnson is one of our roots music, one of our roots artists. And he needs all the props and should get all the props that he can from every possible music there is. I do. Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah, because he created this out of a spirit that he had. And it wasn't, the Crossroads trading his soul to the devil and all that. You know, I don't think you have to do all that. you know, why can't you trade your soul elsewhere, you know, if you're going to do any trading at all? You know?
Sure.
Yeah, and I don't think that there is a trade. I think it's sheer determination.
Practice.
Yes.
Practice.
Exactly. Yeah. So I sometimes that myth stuff, it's hard for me to go with. That's just not where, that's not.
Okay, but let me push us in that direction.
Okay, go ahead.
As an audience member and as a lover of music, I know that what I'm looking for when I'm either watching on TV or listening to a record, I'm looking for that singular moment of transformation. I think that actors, you know, and musicians in particular, they will walk on stage in their body with their instrument and start playing. But at some point in time, at least from my position as a person in the audience, it's almost like there's a merger, a melding of the person and her or his instrument. They become one. And as they sort of, and I'm looking at this is how I'm seeing it. I could be, maybe it's me that's messed up, I don't know. But I'm looking at this and I see a change takes place almost molecular, you know, with them. And that change then changes the room.
Yes.
The sound changes, you know, the whole feeling, the stereophonic, you know, the cosmicness of it becomes different, clearer. So I look for that in art and in music and in performance in particular. What do you look for as an artist and as a curator and an appreciator of music and creativity?
Have you come together? Have you accepted the music? Has the music accepted you as an artist? Have you come together? Are you one? And when that artist is one with his instrument, whatever, if it's a physical guitar, bass, vocals, whatever that may be, are you one with yourself? Because all of those instruments are yourself, are you. And are you skirting off into the distance, trying to separate yourself or trying to outdo yourself in some silly way? I look at artists like, one stands out to me is Betty LaVette. Now, Betty LaVette can hone in her music and then bring you in with her. Mm. And it's like, oh my God. You know, another artist, we were talking about Stevie Wonder. He's another one of those people. James Brown was another one of those people. You could jump up and holler and with him, you know, because you felt it. Prince, another one of those artists just determined to serve and serve you with what he had to offer, his music and his spirit. And the music is the spirit, and spirit is the music. That's the way I see it. You can't separate it.
So let me ask you to apply that to your work as an artist. You are a visual artist. What do you do? Describe your work, if you would. And how does this notion of spirit both infuse and or direct, if at all, you as an artist, as a creator, as you create?
All right. I'm going to talk about a little bit about photography. Because I'm a visual artist for sure. And from time to time, I have opportunity to teach photography. And people say, ask me, I want to learn photography. So I always say, Al, I don't teach photography. What I teach is how to see, how to visualize. Mm-hmm. What do you see when you look through the lens? What do you see? And whatever it is you see turns into photography once you hit that shutter, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then we look at the photo and I'm particularly talking about a student of mine, Terri-Ann Nash's son, Kevin, he was just a wonderful student because he was so anxious and so willing to learn what he called photography. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what do you see as we looked at a photo? Mm-hmm. And he would say this, that, and the other. And I says, okay, so look around the target, the subject matter. Mm-hmm. What do you see that's around the subject matter? And then that is when he started to see, because you have to see past the subject or beyond, maybe not past it, but certainly beyond it and around it. And so I said, okay, you passed the class. but we went on several trips. We took photos of some of the oddest things that he thought taking a photo of a fire hydrant was like, I don't want to take a picture of that. Yes, you do. You want to take a picture of a fire hydrant. Yes, you do. So that we can understand how to look. So that is when you can see so well that you do not necessarily have to take 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 or whatever number of shots of that same subject, then that's when you can see. Now, as far as paints on canvas, it's the visualization of what you're going to put on there. That's where the spirit comes in. You know, you can splash paint any kind of way. But what do you want? How do you want the canvas to materialize? Mm-hmm. You know, what is it? What are the colors that you want to use? And what are the colors that once you've got those 4 or 5 or whatever number of colors there are, then you say, no, that's not enough. You got to add some more color to this, you know, and you got to blend something. And you got to bring in a white, but not a whole lot, you know, to blend in the red with the blue, with the this, with the other, you know what I'm saying? Or the green.
Are you having a conversation with yourself as you do?
Absolutely. That? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not out loud. Mm-hmm. It's not an out loud conversation. Sometimes it is, mm-hmm. but many times it's like, I'm thinking, you know, the sky is not always blue. So come on now, let's get creative here. Mm. You know, go get you some purple, you know, mm. and go get you some orange, you know, or whatever, or gold. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And while you're at it, stop by the glitter department. You know, so it's the visualization in your spirit. Mm-hmm. In my spirit, I'm speaking of myself. It's a visualization in my spirit. And I say, this is how I want this to look. And once I get to the end, it never is. I don't get to the end. And at some point, it's like, it has to end, of course. But then how close to the end can I get? Mm. So that's where I am. And that is going to certainly please me. But I wanted to, even more importantly, please the audience that's going to be at the exhibit. You see what I'm saying? You know, mm-hmm. because they don't want to know all that turmoil, selling your soul to the devil stuff. they want to see the finished product or hear the finished product. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Or see it or whatever. And so it's going over and over and over with oneself. And sometimes it takes a moment, and sometimes it takes months. And sometimes it takes many months. And then sometimes you have to put that canvas or whatever back, and it'll take a year. But at some point, yes, it comes to an end.
Sure, sure. When did you discover your interest in art? When did you decide that you were a creator?
Ooh.
When did you know it?
When did I know it? Okay, I think I knew it. Ooh, hell, that's a hard question. I think I knew it when I was in Chicago. I went to an art class. Yes, I said, I want to take an elective. And Roosevelt University. Mm-hmm. And didn't know I was sitting in a classroom with a real artist, the instructor. The name passes me, I'm gonna try to remember it, but I wish I could remember his name, is the one who taught me or showed me. I'm not sure if he showed or taught. Well, he wasn't really hands-on, so he always talked a good game. And so he was the one that taught me how to see and look at the canvas, an empty canvas. Because I was in visualization. How to look at an empty canvas. What's going to be at the top, the bottom, left, right, and the middle? And then don't forget, there's a middle right and a middle left. So what are you going to put there? What's going to be your subject? Is it going to be color? Is it going to be something that we can actually recognize? Is it going to be a building? Is it going to be a scene? Is it going to be an individual? Well, I always picked something that was right in front of my face. I've got photos of shoes, of a pair of shoes that I painted and set them up a certain kind of way. Something else came to mind. Oh, I imagined a huge fish on the floor in a dining room. Don't ask. Don't ask. It goes further out than that, my dear. my imagination is unbelievable sometimes. It's way out there. And I think the program Saturday mornings reflects that too. But that's, you know, so it's real and unreal. But more importantly, I think it's creative. It's being creative and being creative through the spirit. And so you have to go with what you feel, Well, I'm speaking to myself. I don't know if I'm speaking to anyone else, but I have to go with what I feel. And if I feel a fish acting like it's out of water, and his tail and his body is flexed, if you know what I mean, it can flex his body into a semi-U, then that's what I'm going to paint. And I'm going to paint a dining room table and a door over on the left or the right, and a window window on the wall. You know.
And the fish on the floor.
And, oh, Donald Baum. And Dr. Baum would always say, wow, where'd that come from? And I was like, I don't know. And I said, but this is what I'm doing. And so we got along real well because he was weird too. Different for sure. Maybe not weird, but definitely different.
And so where does the sense of healing come from? You talk, and the program specifically addresses healing and celebration. How does the notion of healing emerge as part of your name, in your work, in your daily walk? What does healing mean to you? How does that inform, you know, your daily living and your programming?
Well, healing, after Lynn died, 2003, I said, this was horrible, devastation. Something that I had not, it was a new experience, I'll put it that way. I don't know if I'd ever had not experienced it, but it was a new experience for me. So I needed to gather myself, hold on to myself, keep functional, and maintain some kind of equilibrium. So I discovered healing through another friend, Jim. Not necessarily discovered healing, but discovered the word. And then looked at healing and said, oh, so healing is a whole bunch of stuff. Mm. It's a whole lot of things. It's acknowledging that you need to be healed, and then that it is a journey. And so there's increments of healing. Mm-hmm. You look in, I'm speaking of myself only. I look within and say, is this a good moment for me right now? Because I believe that one must live in the moment. One can't act, because you don't know nothing about the future, even though, because like it was saying, tomorrow never comes. Mm-hmm. So I always live in the moment. And what am I doing in the moment right now? I am focusing on right being with Al McFarland, the conversations with Al McFarland on this Tuesday. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm focusing on. But then Al is helping me to focus on myself through. So I'm using you.
Yeah.
So Al is helping. You are helping me to understand even more so what healing is. And healing is many, many recipes. Mm-hmm. And the first healing for me, the initial healing for me, is acknowledging it, saying, yes, this is happening. This did happen. Don't linger, but you can't help but linger, and waver back and forth into the past, so to speak. But you still have to live in the moment, even though you're surrounded by all of these entities that say, well, you remember when? Yes, I do, but not as clearly as some, but more than others. But I am here dealing with the immediate. Mm-hmm. But I also, when I talked about healing recipes, there's so many of them. I do rituals. I burn candles. My friend Loretta, who you know, Loretta Oates, she sent me three candles, and she says, continue your rituals without, but I have, she sent me a battery operated one. In the way in the world, I'd have spent that much money on three candles. And I won't say how much, but whoa. but it's unbelievable, lifelike. But anyway, I'll be trying to push paper away from it so it won't catch fire, because it's not going to, because it's battery operated. And it's interesting. But anyway, so never mind all that. But healing is burning candles in any way you decide to do that. And I have found, Loretta has located and found a new way for me to burn candles, because I ain't trying to burn nobody's stuff down. and then, you know, when you burn candles, you might do a little incense, you know, or something like that. But then mantras are important. That's why it's important to for me, when I'm closing out R&B for Healing on Celebration on Saturday mornings, I always want to remind people to cherish the good times.
That's right.
Always. Don't be lingering in that gray area. You know, I mean, do you want to stay mad all the time? Do you want to stay unhappy? You want to stay blue, so to speak, whatever that color is? No, don't do that. Don't do that. You know, get out and when it's gardening time, get out and get in the dirt, or you know, do some pot gardening. And so I'm going through my healing recipes, and then create some recipes, yours or somebody else's, improve upon somebody else's. Clearly music, always. I'm reading now a little bit more than I have. I'm reading fiction, but I'm also reading nonfiction. I've taught a friend of mine how to do a half smile. And I said, you don't always have to be going around grinning and carrying on or with a frown. I said, just go on and do a part your lips, maybe your teeth, you know, a little bit, and just curl up a little bit, open your eyes and just smile. Do a half smile. You don't have to grin.
Right.
And then or laugh. You don't have to do none of that. Half smile. And then journaling. Journaling is important. I have a friend that has journals for about 25 or 30 years, Dorothy in Chicago, Dorothy Miller. She introduced me to journaling. And I said, you're writing a book every day? And she said, yeah, I make notes of things that's happened to me in my life. Yeah, or in my journey. And it's not even a lifetime, because from midnight to midnight is not necessarily a life, it's a journey. That's a journey. So, and I just spoke to her the other day, and she says, I'm putting a note in my book, in my journal. I don't have time to actually do a full thing, but I want to make a note that I talk to you. I put your name in my book. Oh, okay. Thank you, Dorothy. Yeah. And so meditation is critical. You know, you have to have space and time for yourself. You have to make space, and even if it's 5 minutes or even a couple of minutes, you're sitting on the bus, the train, your car. Don't meditate too much in a car, but when you're driving. But sometimes you can.
Yeah, sometimes driving is meditation. Yes, it is.
Absolutely. So meditation is very, very important to me. And you pick and choose what that moment is.
Yeah, meditation is, as you're speaking, a way of knowing. And the phrase that comes to me, I'm not sure where I read it, but it was, some people dance to know. And so dancing can be a form of meditation.
Absolutely.
You're speaking about driving.
And for me, meditation is, some people can say focus, but it's also an opportunity to center yourself or recenter yourself. You know, because sometimes when you go to these therapists, you have an opportunity to meditate within that time frame that you are talking about, all the good things and because when you go to therapy, it's not all about woe me. Sometimes we want to set, sometimes we, no, all the time we must celebrate ourselves, even when we don't want to. And that's very time that you do. You say, I am a good person. And I don't know why I can't get along with people. Well, I have a couple of friends that need to.
What's wrong with them, right?
Exactly. So you meditate on that. You know what I'm saying? And then you come to the conclusion, well, maybe I am a contributor. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? It's important to celebrate yourself and not always beat yourself down about this, that, and the other. Because then you're defeating the healing part of heal. Yeah. So I think that there are many, those are the 10, 8, 9, 10 things that I make note of so that I can see some of the stuff that I need to do. You know, there are other things that are not on my list, but I do them in
20 seconds. Time goes so fast.
But there it is. That's the main thing is heal, be willing to celebrate yourself. Yeah. And then do it.
And then do it. And that in itself is healing. Listen, Grant.